Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, a mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and young soul. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Brian.
How are you doing?
I'm feeling like a young soul.
Yeah.
We are nothing if not flexible.
Absolutely.
In our ability to kind of get the show up and running in a short amount of time. But I just want to say this to everyone. I can't find my phone, so it may ring.
All
and
right.
Then we'll know where it is. So that's very much a 21st century issue, right?
Definitely.
I've looked through all of my pockets. I've gone through my large purse, and I cannot locate it. So please do not call me to try to locate my phone, because we'll just let it be where it is. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I am glad we're here. I'm excited to be here. This is a big week. Today is, you know, primary day. I hope everyone is out voting and doing their civic duty. Thank you. I like seeing your sticker there, Brian.
My I voted sticker.
I do absentee, so I don't get a sticker. They should stick one in the...
Yeah.
That stinks.
I do it, too, and I usually just drop it off in person.
So you can get the sticker.
And then I get my sticker,
yeah. I don't want people, you know, looking at me like, hey, where's your sticker,
right.
Professor
no, they
Barrett?
Should, yeah, they should send one back to you or something.
I know. Oh, yeah. So those who are absentee ballot, we have our silencers. We just know on a deep level.
That's right.
But that's, you know, this is kind of exciting because for the first time in a long time, California, you know, is a player in the primary. So I'm interested to see what happens tonight, and a lot of local elections going on. So, you know, I love the excitement around the election this year.
Mm-hmm.
I love, because I work with young people, I love seeing their interest peaked, and I love being able to poke at them about getting registered to vote and participating and taking a part, because what we have to keep reminding the millennials, and I know a lot of you listeners are millennials, there are more of you than any other generation at this point. You know, for the first time in 40 years, the baby boomers are not the majority when it comes to population. And so if the millennials could get off their screens, right, mm-hmm. and stop reading BuzzFeed all day long, they could actually come together and shift the course of our future. And I think there's a lot of, you know, people in power, the old guard in politics, don't want the millennials to understand that. Mm-hmm. They don't want them to know that they have the numbers. But I certainly do. I certainly want to see them get excited and feel engaged. And, you know, the more people that take ownership of our country, the better. So yay for primary day. Also, this week is the end of school for a lot of different programs. You know, the high school graduations are coming up all this week. And I just drove, you know, as I coming into town, I saw there must have been a sixth grade celebration going on down the street. Lots of moms dressed up. And, you know, there's something so poignant about graduation day and graduation week and what that means for high school graduates and for college graduates. You know, we talked about it last week, that uncertainty and wondering if they're prepared enough to know what's going to happen next. And what's interesting about graduation is it kind of ends that period of time where you lived your life in the season of school, right? The academic year. For those of us who teach, we get to stay in that academic season forever. But when you get into life, and I'm sure you experience this, Brian, you know, when you have no longer the summer vacation to look forward to, you know, June comes along and all of a sudden you still are working.
Yep.
Isn't that kind of a shock?
Yeah.
Like,
I've been slowly trying to work my career back towards education just so I could have the summers off again.
It is. There's something about, you know, living our life in those seasons, mm-hmm. and knowing that there's, you know, a finite amount of time, then we get to look forward to something different. So the graduations that are happening this week, the transitions with voting and how the elections can change kind of the course of our communities and the course of our country. You know, June is kind of the opening up of the summer season, concert seasons.
Yeah.
We've got Live Oak coming up in 2 weeks. So that's exciting. I mean, I can feel the energy shifting, and it could possibly be because I only have one final left. And so I'm in that short timer mode. But I'm also excited because we have a guest with us this week that was supposed to be with us last week, and she was unable to come up. And now we're able to get together and talk about the experience of another season of life, which is old age, and how we as a culture, how we as a society approach old age or look at old age, and if we're actually able to acknowledge old age and talk about it, because we're a youth-obsessed culture. We spend $4 billion a year on cosmetic surgeries and cosmetics and hair products and physical therapy and physical trainers in an effort to delay the inevitable aging process. So my guest today, Dr. Lois West Bristow, is here to talk about her experience as an elder in the community. She'll be 87 next month. So according to the groupings of aging, old age, she is officially in the old olds category.
Yes. I love that.
So we're going to talk about her progression through the process of aging and what that's been like. And we're going to open up the phones today to ask other people what their progression through aging has been, if they feel like they're enjoying this last segment or last season of their lives, or if they're finding it challenging for any reason, or what is the wisdom that they're carrying with them into their old age season of life, and do we feel invisible, or do we feel seen as we age? So I'm excited to have the conversation, and I'm excited that you're all here today. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can participate in our conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can join us on our Facebook page, and I update each week what we'll be talking about and try to put a picture up of guests if you want to see who is in here sharing the afternoon with me. We have our webpage, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Or you can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or the app on your phone. And if you can find your phone, then you can listen to shows at your convenience. They go up each week. And I guess you just hit subscribe and they're there in your phone. So we look forward to having you participate. And as always, if you're a little shy about coming on the air, but there's something you want to share, give us a call. And Brian's always happy to step in and field your call. Do you do voices? Would you try to like imitate?
I don't. I mean, no.
So Brian will be happy to read the question, but he will not promise voices.
Right. I'll do it in my own voice.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate your voice.
Thank you.
All right. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Dr. Lois West Bristow. Lois is my friend. I'll say that first. She'll be turning 87 next month. She has had a wide variety, a myriad of careers over her lifetime, including being a wife and a mother of how many children?
I have three children.
Three children. How many grandchildren?
Five grandchildren.
Five grandchildren and now a great-grandmother.
Yes.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
And then on top of that gift you've given to the world, you were a teacher for 40 years. Did I get that correct?
Oh, no. I taught off and on for 20.
Okay.
And then I left education formally, was hired by a job in industry, and left that and founded my own consulting firm. And I had that for 10 years. And loved every bit of it. We worked primarily with colleges and universities. We did have some small businesses that we worked with on an environment that is conducive to excitement about their work and a camaraderie in the group rather than a divisive, attacking, backbiting kind of thing that sometimes is set up. Our basic philosophy of life on that was the acceptance that people want to belong, to be loved, and to be competent. And if those areas are covered, it flows naturally into being part of a team and being comfortable with the roles that you play there.
And so you took your teaching experiences and kind of grew them into different areas over
right.
the years.
But our major contracts were working with the colleges and universities in their educational programs focusing on teaching strategies. Yes.
To help teachers be more effective. Exactly.
Right.
You can't get away from it. You are a teacher at heart. Besides your years with education and owning your consulting firm, Lois was an elected official.
Yes.
And that's appropriate for today and our primary season. And what elected position did you hold?
We had moved to Oregon. It was a state we had been visiting for years and years and years because my history is Oregonian. And I was the developer. My son was the builder of the first passive soul townhomes in Bend, Oregon. And sadly, they were beautiful. That part is good. But it was 1980. And if you remember 1980, interest went from 6 and 7% to about 22%, which was not conducive to more building. However, they stand today and are as beautiful as they ever were. Then a group came to me and asked me if I would run for county commissioner. And, of course, I'm in California, and I thought county supervisor. I said, like, is that a real job? Because I was in no position to volunteer any place. I was looking at toast and eggs for breakfast, you know, that kind of reality.
You're supporting yourself and
your
family.
And they said yes. And I was an independent. And they told me that makes it very difficult because the party sides, the major party side, will take a certain percentage if Godzilla is running for office. So you have to just pick up what's in between and left over. And I ended up with 49% of the vote the first time and the others getting 20-something and 20-something. And the second time I ran, I got 50, which was nice as an independent.
So you've held office, you've been a teacher, you've owned your own businesses, you've raised a family, and then at the age of 80... you defended your dissertation
right. And
earned your PhD.
Yes, yes.
And you also have written a book. Well,
yes.
You've written more than one book, but the book around with your PhD had to do with coming to grips with...
with the reality of death, the finiteness of life, and that it's a natural process. And every stage in life has its own value. Our society acts like the only really in thing to do is to stay young forever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do that, you have to sort of bow out around 42.
Oh, my God.
If you want to be young forever, right?
Well, and that's one of the things I hope we talk about today. It's like, where is that cutoff where we have to stop pretending that we're young? Like, at what age do you, you know, stop wearing that mini skirt? Or, you know,
I believe that it's how an individual accepts themselves in life,
mm-hmm.
and really knowing that I wouldn't want to be 12 forever. I don't know about you. And I wouldn't want to go through the teenage years too many times over. And somebody asked me one time, well, don't you wish you were at least go back to 70? And I said, never, because I don't want to learn all over everything I've learned since 70. I'm glad that work is finished. And I have new things on the agenda to learn always. That's just the way life is. And so, no. Until 6 months ago, I experienced phenomenally good health. I did not take medication. I was healthy.
So up until the age of 86.
Right.
And being able to earn your PhD and continue working. And you also live in a home that you designed yourself.
Right. And was owner-builder.
Your owner-builder and beautiful San Ynez. I mean, you've had people would say a graced life when it comes to aging, to get to the age of 86 and feeling still vivacious. And you and our friendship has grown over the last year or so through both of our, you know, love of psychology and our connection
yes.
to Pacifica. And I've, you know, been down to your home and you were talking about teaching and, you know, and selling your book. I mean, a lot of action was going on in your life. And then, as you mentioned, 6 months ago, there was a drastic turn, and you've had to, in the last 6 months, make some sharp adjustments in your life. And I think that's a kind of where I wanted to focus our show today, is how is that coming to grips with the change in our independence or our health, and knowing that you are kind of facing those final stages. And so, Lois.
Absolutely, yes.
So
yes.
Do you mind taking us through, you know, what happened 6 months ago?
I'd be glad to.
Okay.
I came home from a fantastic family Christmas, and By the time I landed at LAX, I was ill, just terribly ill. And then there were delays and things, and I stood out in the little cold, windy place, waited an hour and a half for the bus up to Santa Barbara area, and was so sick, and coughing and coughing and sick and sick. And finally, there's nobody in the medical world alive from Christmas to New Year's. This is a matter of policy. So I finally was driven into emergency, and I was misdiagnosed. And so I came home with the Z-Pak medication and felt better when it kicked in for a few days and then just downhill again. But they had told me that my lungs were clear. I had this the thing that was going around. They give me a Z-Pak, and I did not have pneumonia. And they were mistaken. I did have pneumonia, and the X-ray went to the radiologist who found pneumonia, but nobody bothered to tell me or my doctor. So for 2 months, I really was untreated and became extremely ill. And there were many complications, but I finally got into somebody after I was told, well, no, nothing's really wrong with you. And I really hadn't felt this ill before, but I would say to myself, I feel like I'm sick. Like, you can't be sick. But I was sick. And so I've been coming out of that in a long two steps forward, three steps back, three steps forward, one step back kind of process. And partly that was due to my age. To rally with such a severe illness at that point was problematic, to say the least. And I have in certain arenas responded beautifully. I have some others that I'm still working on, and that is the lack of energy and the weakness of body and the tremendous loss of weight. So why didn't I have this loss of weight years ago, when I really could have said happily goodbye? And I had to face several huge changes, accepting that I was a seriously ill individual. And with age, the eyes go and the ears go and the brain goes. I mean, you forget and forget and forget things, more so than before. The intellect stays intact. The intuition stays intact. The ability to function at that level is the same as it's always been. It's the day-to-day essential tools, like remembering where you are and can't see to get anyplace else and can't hear what's going on. Those fun things are not fun. And I realized finally that I couldn't live alone. That was huge for me. I had found the lot, designed a home, was owner builder, planted the yards, you know, just did all of this. It was like pioneering in my 60s, late 60s. And I had to first take the shock to my body, the shock to my soul, the shock to my heart into my body to feel it through. If we face something that is very painful, our tendency as a society is to say, chin up, I'm going to be fine, think positively, and we skip around it and we tuck it away and it festers. The challenging thing is to go forth and open up every cell of your body to breathe in the pain.
And the acceptance that something has changed.
Totally. And that's the what that has changed. It isn't changed per se, because some change is just delicious. This was not delicious change. This was losing autonomy. This was wondering if I would get well. This was a lot of things. And my attachment to my house, is insane. It's an exquisite house.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Dr. Lois West Bristow. She has come in to share her experiences as a wise elder in our community. She'll be turning 87 next month. And after a long life of independence and autonomy and achievement and continuously moving forward in her life, she has reached a place where she's having to take stock of where she is and start looking towards her family and her friends for more support and a different way of entering into whatever this next season of life is from 87 and beyond. And you're welcome to be part of our conversation. 805-781-3875. What are your feelings about this season of age and aging and old age? Are you at that stage yet, or are you on your way? And what about this idea of autonomy and independence? I have this conversation with my parents often, and my mother-in-law. I don't know if it's your generation or, you know, if I will feel that way, but there seems to be a very strong sense of the elders that they want to remain in their homes or be independent and not have their children step in and take care of them, or not have their children be involved in the day-to-day.
How true.
And so there's this fierce piece of that. So I'm wondering from our listeners, what is your experience like this? Are you someone taking care of your parents at this point? And how have you had those conversations with your parents about taking care of or watching over finances or moving? 805-781-3875 is a number to be part of our conversation today. So, Lois, what has this opening been like for you? I imagine that it hasn't been, oh, I'll think about it, and then over the weekend I'm fine and I accept what's changing. How long has this process been, and where are you going next?
Where I'm going to live with my daughter. I'm very close to my children and grandchildren, and it has been a blessing beyond blessings. And they're very supportive. And they were concerned and talked amongst themselves, like, how do we keep Mom in the house? Because that's really where she wants to be, and we want her where she wants to be. Mm-hmm. And I was the one that finally called and said, I can't live alone. And I realized, I thought at the time, not knowing how ill I was, that I thought I was losing my mind. And I remember sobbing, and the next morning, just cool as ice, I called and said, first my daughter, then my son, and said, I will not be able to live alone. So we'll have to, you know. And they
so
got
is the crying a grieving, do you think?
It's multifaceted. One thing, there is the loss of your dream. Mm-hmm. My feeling always, I have no fear of death, and I just want to leave from home and go over. I don't want to have a bunch of stopways of hospitals and stuff on the way. No. I'm going to leave from home. And I was no longer going to leave from home. That was a blow. And taking that in, as I have done so many times in processing change, I felt the release of pain and the comfort. The peace that came was amazing. There was,
when you made the decision.
Yeah, well, as I was sitting processing the decision, processing the pain and the fear and what I was giving up and the sadness of it and the devastation of it and the failure of it, of not being healthy anymore, to go into that deeply. And it doesn't take forever. And finally, I just released and the peace came and the decision was made. Then there was another and another and another, and I think enough already, everybody.
So it's kind of layers of the grief. So you came to the decision, but that wasn't the end of the grieving
process. No, because I had a new incident happening. I had these diagnoses of I was deathly ill.
So on then top of the pneumonia, there were other illnesses. So you didn't just have one thing you were battling. All of a sudden you felt like it was...
Right. I was... And I keep trying to get my head around the fact that I was very, very ill. I'm not a very ill person, but I am. And I'm recovering, and the doctor and I both feel complete recovery is, I won't see sharp as a tack or be able to hear things. But I want some of my brain back, and there's a likelihood, and there's a likelihood that it doesn't, and I have to develop systems in order to survive. I have computerized my house so that every cupboard has its contents on my computer so that I can look up copy paper and know that it is in the second drawer in the cabinet in the living room or the fifth drawer in the office by the first file.
So very pragmatically, you're helping your brain functioning by making lists.
Right. And I'm going to have to do more of that. The first agenda that happened just recently, like in 2 weeks, was that I needed to leave now before my house was on the market. I need to leave before it sells because I'm not able to live safely alone. I'll turn on the water and then remember to go turn it off 2 days later. Mm-hmm. I will let things boil dry on the stove. I wonder if I'm really safe at all. And so my kids just stepped up to the plate in every way in the world. She and my son were talking. My daughter and my son were talking often about what can we do, what's best. I don't think she'll want to leave the house. And so they were so relieved when I said, and I'm going to my daughter's because she has a place that's beautiful for me to stay. And I go on Friday, which is like, I won't be ready.
So a week from this Friday or this coming Friday?
A week from this Friday, which is huge. And so I am now just step by step sorting the files I must take. Step by step, the house will stay totally furnished. I will take just what I need. Because the consensus is, medically and from people who know, I must have 30 days bed rest. And I must be freed of stress. Now, you're not feeling well and you can't find things and you have to move and have everything organized in 6 hours. It's stress. Right. And I just eat up the stress, which isn't like me. So there's a release in that. To know that I won't have to support a large, not a large house, but a lovely house. And I will be in loving company. Mm-hmm. So there are positive sides. It doesn't mean that you don't accept and go through and acknowledge and live out the pain of the transition so you can let it go.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of our conversation today. And with my lovely guest, Dr. Lois Wes Bristow. And we're talking about aging in our society. And what is that plan when you go from having your health, having your energy, having your independence to recognizing that a change has to happen. And how I don't think all of our wise elders are able to come to that place where they just say, I've made this choice. And I wonder how it is for those of my generation whose parents aren't at the place of saying, I will make the change, and how do we as young people step in? We'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. Louise, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I want to tell you, I love your show, and I love your gifts today.
I do, too.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Yes, I am an occupational therapist. I've been in practice 30 years, and my last 16 years have been in a care facility, and I work with older adults. I would say anyone over the age of 60 to 110, and I just love it. I find older people fascinating. I think they have so much to teach and to tell the rest of the world. But the reason why I called is this show is so important, I think, to people because I have really changed my practice over the years. I'm at a place where I really try to respect some of the decisions my patients make, regardless if I agree with them or not. And I'm coming from a place of just stepping back and really letting people make choices for themselves. And it's really changed. I mean, I think when I first started as a therapist, I was really wanting to control the outcomes and do what the spouses and the children want. And now it's really about the patient. And I think you're both absolutely correct. Things are changing. And the world is moving faster. And I think just listening more to people and allowing them to come to their decisions and choices, good or bad, and helping them through the outcome.
Louise, thank you. Lois?
I agree with you. And the change is a part of life. And embracing change, and the earlier one starts to embrace change, the easier it becomes, even though it's not easy in old age. I had another impact. A dear friend of mine said to me that her mother had died the previous year, and she was independent and successful and all these wonderful things and a little bit stubborn, and she refused to go live with her children. She didn't want to be a burden. And she died sooner than she would have, and the children were devastated that they hadn't had the offer accepted. And I kept thinking, yes, I'll go, but it'll be, 6 months from now or whatever. And listening to her tell it from the child's point of view clicked with me. And I thought, I cannot do that to my children. And I called within 10 minutes to tell them that I was ready to go whenever it needed to be, to move. And so accepting change a lot of times is helped along the way by people who share their perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I was certainly helped in many, many times in many places in coping with change and handling change and what have you. I have a plaque that was given to me, and it says, when Plan A fails, there are 25 more letters in the alphabet. And I loved that. But I am on Plan W. That is, and everybody laughs, and I think, W, X, Y, Z. Use my time wisely and well and make this plan something that fits me so that I don't lose the joy of life, which I and only I can create or lose.
Anything else, Louise?
No, I'm enjoying the show. It's wonderful. Thank you both.
Thank you for taking the time to call. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. My guest today is Dr. Lois West Bristow, and we're talking about her transition to moving from complete independence and autonomy to joining the fold and love of her family, moving in with her daughter, so that in many ways, and if I'm quoting your words correctly, that you can be more relaxed and at peace, knowing that you're cared for by those who love you. And as much as you've loved your home, there is a certain amount of peace in that change. And I also love the idea of Plan A through Z. I'd never thought of that before, but we all should try to live all the plans to Z, right? Shouldn't we have 20 plus different lifetimes? And you've had, I mean, I've known you for this amount of time, you've had three different lifetimes in the last year and a half.
Yes. And I'm working on the next one. I want to write my next book, which is very well developed. And it's called Huff and Puff and Pray to the Moon, Increments of Transformation. And it's how the everyday stuff in life is there to teach us. If we just look a little further, a little more closely, and it'll just be short stories and poetry and all of the experiences I've had where life itself has been the teacher, and it's incumbent upon the individual living the life to be open, open, open to the wealth around us.
805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation today. Beth, what's on your mind?
I want to be Lois when I grow up.
You and me both. You and me both.
And, yeah, I'm 52, and I can't, there's not much I know, but there's some real basic things. I love what you're both saying, and I realized for me the only constant is change, and so I resist change. And what I love is that you can apply what Lois is saying to everything, because I have to accept it. I mean, I can kick and scream and deny it and all that, but then walking through it and leaning into it is the only way to work through it, you know. And I don't have kids, but I had parents. My mom died about a month ago, my dad about 11 years ago. And there was that part of them that we just never talked about that kind of stuff. It just wasn't okay in our family. And so I did the best, you know, that I could. And I honestly don't have any regrets, but it would have been so much easier, you know, if my folks had had friends that were going through similar things, or, you know, people in that same transition, because it always helps to talk to people who have walked through what you're walking through, you know. And I just think that, you know, yeah, it's great to think about autonomy and living at home, but also what a gift for your kids to be able to return the love and the healthy attitude and all of that that you've obviously given them and they grabbed onto. And that's such a gift for them, you know. So as a parent, can't get it. As a kid, I get it. And as a nurse, I'm just so grateful that you have the family you do, and that You have people who love you to help you live out, you know, your years with dignity. And I can't wait for your new book.
Thank you so much for calling in, Beth. And she brings up a great point, Lois. So what about the elders who don't have that conversation with their children? Or how, you know, if let's put it this way. Let's say your children had come to you a year and a half ago and said, Mom, we think your time is up at the house and we want you to move in with us. How differently would this?
Number one, my children would not approach things that way, and we talk very openly.
But for a lot of families, as Beth was saying, it's not an option.
And what she's saying is very important, and it needs to be put on the table and become an option, because pain is a part of life, and being born and living and dying is a part of life. And the more open you can be, I've talked to my grandkids about it. They're, you know, grown men and women. My children and I have talked about it numerous times, how I feel about it. I don't want my life prolonged. I want to live while I'm viable, and I don't want to be kept alive on tubes.
But what was your plan if you hadn't had the sudden change in health, right, that has changed the direction? And you said, I want to die at home. What was the plan? Did you assume you would just feel healthy and then you would die? Or, you know, what was your plan for staying in the home?
Yes, I was in the process of planning an addition where we would have a caretaker live there 24/7. So I would be in my home, but I would have someone to drive and someone there. And that was all in place for development. But I was so healthy. Mm-hmm. It wasn't immediate concern. It's like, you know, when I become frail, and they would laugh and say, you frail. And I am frail. That's a huge shock. One other point is that it's important to embrace that life has pain. And the quote from Earthwalk, I think, is very, very important in how it looks. It says, without despair, we cannot transfer our allegiance to reality. It is a kind of mourning period for our fantasies. Some people do not survive this despair, but no major change within a person can occur without it. So embracing the despair does not mean wallowing in despair. It means embrace, accept, work through, and go on.
And I think that's kind of what we see changing in the elderly. You know, when we look at gerontology and doing counseling with elders, it's the getting rooted in one mindset, right? It's that stuckness that really makes it challenging for the elderly to go into plans X, Y, and Z, that you get more rooted and more stuck, that traps us. 805-781-3875. Hi, Julie. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. Such interesting timing. Thank you so much. I don't always catch your show, but this one really makes my heart go pitter-patter. My mother did pass a few years ago. She was in an independent living. Then we moved her up here after she broke her hip and was in a home where she wasn't real comfortable. And I said to my sister, who was the power of attorney, please let me get a home with Mom. And we can afford to have someone come in during the day, and I'll be home at night. And she adamantly refused, and I had to respect that. It was very difficult, but I did get to spend the whole week with my mother at the end. As a result, and I had quit my job in an office, and kind of was like, okay, well, what do I want to do? So I went back to caregiving through in-home support service because it left such an impact on me, because there are people that are low income. They cannot afford to go into a beautiful care facility, and their family may not be in town. So to me, it's humbling to come into these people's home, and they trust me, and I care for them. And I just had an interview for private pay last night, and I said, you know what? I have one rule, and it is the golden rule, because someday I may be there. If I live that long, and I just think, I hope that I am kind enough and caring enough that this person feels comfortable and content these days, these golden days toward the end of their life. It's, you know, like I said, it's so humbling to be in the presence of people who have had their independence taken away in some form or another, and they've got fantastic histories, and they're brilliant people who've contributed to society, to raising families, to being, you know, traveled the world, and here they are in my care, and it's a huge task, and I can't think of anything else I would rather do. So I, you know, the ones that are private care, we've worked out with the family how much they'll pay, and it can be enormously expensive. And so I'm on both ends of it, where I get to work with people and so that they're able to stay in their homes. So that's why it's just such a delight to hear you talk about your life and how hard for you to talk so openly about how difficult it is for you to give up your independence. And and once again, it confirms for me how important it is for me to make these beautiful people's lives as easy and as sweet as possible.
Julie,
at this time.
Thank you. And I can hear the passion in your voice for the work you're doing, which, mm-hmm. you know, that's what it takes. You know, the field of gerontology is the fastest growing field right now, and everything from healthcare to in-home services to mental health care. So to find people like Julie who have the heart to do this work, because as she said, and it's very true, you know, very few people have the financial resources to say, I think I'm going to stay in my home and build an addition.
And have beautiful place to stay.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't think that is the common story. Hi, Ann, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, kind of the same thing that Julie was talking about. I am on a very limited income. If I were not, you know, on subsidized housing, I would be on the street. It's as simple as that. So I'm really grateful for the programs that I'm eligible for. I'm 79. I do great. I go to the gym but as I get older, I can feel things ebbing, and not having the financial options to do much of anything in terms of if I have to go into long-term care, I'm going to have to take what Medi-Cal will take, and those places generally are not. I've been in some of them, and they're just not great. So I think there are so many of us that are have worked all their lives. I raised kids alone. My husband died when my kids were 4 and 5. I raised those kids. But I never had a job that paid me enough that I could actually put money away. And there are a whole lot of people friends that I know that are in the same situation that I am. Some of them not as, you know, poverty is relative. And so they, you know, they have a little bit more money maybe coming in than I do or a little bit less. But there are a lot of us out there. The senior female population is generally just financially not in very good shape.
Well, and thank you for calling, because there's a couple of things I wanted to respond to. One was, besides the elderly population of single women mm-hmm. being a very large number, 2/3 of all of the care that's done for the elderly is done by middle-aged women who step out of the workforce to care for mm-hmm. the elderly. So they also give up benefits or Social Security. And I think that's one of the hidden shames of our culture, is that, you know, for all the women who did the caregiving, raising children and then caring for the sick and then caring for the elderly who mm-hmm. didn't pay into Social Security, find themselves in need for care and not having access to it. And that's all a part of Dr. Rianne Eisler's work in caringeconomy.org. And she's moving towards trying to get the whole work of care included in our gross domestic product, so we start valuing the caregiving work that's done and being there to support people of your age who are finding themselves in this space. Because you're right, there's not even an answer. We can't even say, oh, don't worry, Anne, because this is going to come through and take care of you. It really right. isn't there.
Right.
I think she has an incredibly important point to make, and that is the underpay of jobs for the elderly and those that can still work, and on services to the elderly. I think Social Security has been frozen on three different periods. Mm-hmm. I mean, balancing the budget on the backs of the elderly doesn't seem like a sound thing. Save a lot of money, but taking care of the humanity who have given much to the world and not pay back to what they've given and have an acknowledgement. The distortion on income, I think, is heartbreaking and and shameful in a society like ours.
So, can I say just one other thing?
Please do.
I in that population of people, of those friends that I know that are in basically the same place I am probably one of the luckiest ones. And I am because a friend of mine about 10 years ago worked for Housing Authority, and she said, you need to get on Section 8. And I said, why do I want to get on Section 8? I'm fine. You know, I'm kind of planning on working forever. And she said, no. And she's put me through that process. Another friend helped me get Medi-Cal. If it were not for these programs, I would be, and I literally would be on the streets. And every time I hear somebody in Congress saying something about, well, we need to cut welfare, or we need to cut this, or we need to cut that, I just cringe because there isn't any place to cut as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And thank you for taking the time to call. And it is, you know, apropos on primary day, when we think about who we're electing and we spend a lot of time talking about policies and needing to care for families, but we don't talk a lot about caring for the elderly. You know, it's not in the forefront. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Dr. Lois West Bristow. She is a PhD. She's an author, an educator, a home builder, a former elected official, a consultant, turning 87 next month, and has lived an incredibly expansive life, and is now coming to the point where she's having to give up her autonomy, her independence, and her home that she built and designed herself, and will be transitioning in the next month, next couple weeks, to moving in with her daughter and starting a new chapter in her life. And as you can hear from Lois's voice, this new chapter includes still thinking about new books and still thinking about new ideas. And we'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. Excuse me. I'm calling completely in a different position. I'm not poor. I have good Medicare insurance. I've got good supplemental insurance. I had a son who was 33 and died last year. I'm 72. My problem is in finding any kind of mental health care in this county for people who have Medicare. Any kind.
So, Mary, off the top of my head...
And not poor. I don't have Medi-Cal. I have just Medicare and the supplemental. So try... I mean, there's nobody that accepts Medicare in this county.
You're correct.
And it's a real challenge. I mean, just to deal with depression...
And grief at my age.
And I have no... Again, I'm looking forward to nobody to take care of me when I'm old. I have a husband. He may outlive me. It's possible, but my son, without having a child, you talk about going to, that sounds fine and dandy, but there's people that... just regular people like me who don't have access to care.
I think Lois can resonate a bit, though, with your story, Mary.
Yes. I believe that what she says is... totally true. I think it is reflected from our attitude toward aging. We don't want to acknowledge aging. People say that people look right through me when they walk by me because an old face says old age is here. And our society says to us, if we want to be acceptable, we must stay young. We must be happy 24/7. Forget about processing pain. And we have to be thin. And if we can qualify on those things and be 38 forever, That's fine. We are not. We get old. And we join in where people are uncomfortable. We're old and we have issues to deal with, and they are more uncomfortable.
Well, and I think what Mary's talking about, though, also is I don't know if there's space for grieving the loss of a child when you're in. Are you 72, Mary?
Almost 72, yeah.
Yes. That there isn't a space. I mean, hospice has support groups, and they have, you know, counselors that you can go see to do grief work. And I don't think there's a cost for that. And so I would contact hospice, because for dealing with the grief, that's a great place. We have the Community Counseling Center on Marsh Street that has a sliding fee scale and has a great array of volunteer therapists. That's another place you can go. But as far as having, you know, individual clinicians in our county that take Medi-Cal or Medicare or actually have space in their practice, we don't have that here. We really don't. So the only support that's there for you are through those, through hospice or the community counseling center, or through going through one of the senior services through Social Security, Social Services. But aside from all that, Mary, I hear the pain in your voice of feeling like you're getting to a place where, as Lois is saying, you're feeling invisible, that you have needs and you want to be heard and you need to be witnessed and you need to be held, and our culture, our society, our community is failing you.
And we're saying, we who age say we also count. We are still here. We make a contribution with our wisdom and our knowledge and so many things we have to offer. And we don't feel acknowledged in our communities.
Not only acknowledged, it's totally ignored. I mean, if I was poor, I could get psychiatric care right down the street. But if I were really well-to-do, I could pay for it and get all the care I wanted, too. But if you're just sort of middle class and you really can't afford $375 regularly to go to a psychiatrist, you're sort of out of luck in this county.
I agree. And I just, as a side note, though, Mary, I encourage you to look into hospice and into community counseling center, because I don't know if you necessarily need a psychiatrist. They're not always the first line of defense when it comes to grief and depression and, you know, changes of life. I mean, the things that you're going through are very much appropriate for work of MFT or a licensed clinical social worker or someone you can access through the community counseling center. I don't think you need to go straight to the psychiatrist if that's not available to you. There are immediate services that can get you started.
And more experience in dealing with issues that she's dealing with.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I hope that helps a little, but I really appreciate you calling in, because I know that Mary's story is the story of many, that you do, Lois, have to admit you have somewhat of a privileged opportunity here, that you have the ability to go live with a daughter.
I am so grateful. I cannot tell you. I'm grateful. I'm grateful that our family is a close family.
And so what, you know, in our last minutes here together, what is it you'd like to share it for others now that you've kind of reached the space and you're in the place of changing who you were for 86 years to being someone who is being cared for? I mean, you are stepping literally into that elder role where the younger generation is going to care for you.
As I say, I feel privileged. I also feel in my bones that I will continue to heal, because I've had such an excellent track record of being healthy. I think that I need to, somebody mentioned their exercise programs. I will be starting the midnight back water exercise to begin to build back strength. My strength is zip right now. I'm looking constantly to what do I still have of my capacities and gifts that are adaptable and usable. What part of my brain is functioning as it always has functioned? What can I do there? What can I do in a new community to take what I have to offer, take care of what is diminishing, and do what I can to compensate and strengthen on that, and keep a vital life? And that vital life must be sparked from within. It can be motivated and inspired from many, 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 many sources. But if you don't grab onto the spark and breathe in the value of your life and know that you still count, what can you do that's workable, that's rewarding? I don't feel that my life is over. I think my life has changed drastically. And the process of that change is complex. And even though I could see what a relief it would be to be there, you know, I was sad about leaving. So I had different emotions happening at the same time. I say, own the emotions. Don't wallow in them. Don't stay in them. Embrace them. Feel them through. Let them go aside and move forward. No matter how many years I have left, I feel that I have richness in life left. And how it will be coming back is what my last stage is waiting to tell me. And we'll see.
And so for those who would be interested in reading your book, how can they get it, the title?
You know, that particular book, Death Comes Not as a Stranger, is temporarily off the market. I have to get it reprinted.
Okay.
And so unless they get a used one on Amazon, that's not available. And I'm working on other projects with some other people to see. And that part is an exciting time. I just need to gain back the energy so that I can do all this stuff.
So happy early 87th birthday to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Dr. Lois West Bristow, my guest today, talking about when change knocks on your door and how do we gracefully accept that. And I think, you know, the takeaway for me is we have to find ways to have conversations with our parents that help us all be heard, that, you know, your needs are heard, that the children can let you know that they want to support you, that they want to be a part of your life, that it hurts them deeply when they feel shut out from the process of caring for you. So that our elders, as independent as they want to be, need to be willing to hear that their children want to be a part of this.
And that doesn't mean they're
trying to take away your autonomy, but they want to give back that love and care.
Right. That's very, very important. All of a sudden my thought ran away from me. I think that sometimes the children are as uncomfortable dealing with life as finite, and they're frightened of it, and so they don't want someone who's dying right there in front of their faces. And that's something we need to look at, too, the acceptance of the naturalness of life beginning and life ending.
And this is probably just the beginning of another conversation we'll have to have
at
some point when you get settled in your new space.
And as always,
thank you to my listeners for being part of this conversation. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or our podcasts are available through iTunes or on our app. You can contact me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and we will post a picture of Lois and myself up on Facebook so you can see who this beautiful woman is. And I look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX. We'll go off with a little Dave Matthews.
Don't give up, I know you can see all the world and the mess that we're making. Can't give up and hope, God will intercede. Come on back, imagine that we could get it together. Stand up for where we need to be. 'Cause crying won't save or feed a hungry child. Can't lay down and wait for a miracle to change things. So lift up your eyes, lift up your heart. Singing, mercy, will we overcome this? Oh, one by one, could we turn it around? Maybe carry on just a little bit longer, and I'll try to give you what you need. Me and you, and you, and you, we just wanna be free, yeah, yeah. But you see, all the world is just as we've made it. And until we got a new world, I got to say that love is not a whisper or a weakness. No, love is strong. And
we got to get together. Yeah, gotta get. So there is no reason to fight. Mercy, will we overcome this? Yeah, one by one, could we turn it around, baby? Carry on just a little bit longer, and I'll try to give you what you need.